Jim Thorpe took the world by storm at the 1912 Olympics in Stockholm, Sweden, bringing home the gold in both the pentathlon and decathlon. The Native American from Oklahoma played both baseball and football professionally. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's still known as one of the greatest athletes of all time.
No one really has excelled in all of these sports, baseball, football, track and field, to the extent that Jim Thorpe did.
But he was broke when he died, and his third wife buried him in a Pennsylvania town that now bears his name, a town he never visited during his life.
The state of Pennsylvania is still attempting to use these remains to attract tourist dollars.
Today on Oklahoma Voices, the life and death of Jim Thorpe. First, the news. Jim Thorpe, one of the greatest athletes of the 20th century, if not the greatest. After winning two gold medals at the 1912 Olympics, the Swedish king told him, "You, sir, are the greatest athlete in the world." Thorpe's response? Thanks. Jim Thorpe was Native American, a member of the Sac and Fox tribe of Oklahoma. He was born in 1887 near Prague, before Oklahoma was a state. His Sauk name meant bright path.
He became almost like a folk hero, like a Paul Bunyan, if you will.
That's Kate Buford. She wrote the book Native American Son, the life and sporting legend of Jim Thorpe. She says Thorpe was born during a turbulent period of Oklahoma history.
He grew up just as the allotment system went in, the land runs begin. He rose up in a period of enormous cultural change and tumult right around Shawnee and Prague and Oklahoma City where he grew up.
As a boy, Thorpe hunted and fished with his father. He could track, shoot, and trap at a young age, and he never lost his love for the outdoors and hunting prey.
And he would always disappoint sports reporters when they would say, "Hey, Jim, what was your favorite sport?" Expecting to hear, you know, "Oh, running for this touchdown," or, you know, "Doing the 1500 meter in 1912 in Stockholm," and he would just say, "Hunting and fishing." And that's where he began in Oklahoma with his father. And I think that's always where he wanted to come back.
Thorpe went to an Indian school in Stroud, but he ran away a lot. This led his father to put him in a boarding school in Kansas. After his mother's death, he left school and worked on a horse ranch. He eventually ended up at the Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. At Carlisle, Thorpe's athletic prowess took off. He joined the track and field team where he was spectacular. But he didn't stop there. He played baseball, boxing, and lacrosse. He took up ballroom dancing.
As soon as he had started being an athlete, American athletes were pressured to specialize. He didn't have to do that. He could try everything because, again, it was brand new.
He made a name for himself on Pop Warner's football team. He was big and fast and could play multiple positions. He was even the team's kicker. His speed and size propelled Carlisle over squads from Harvard and, later, an Army team that featured a young Dwight Eisenhower. In 1912, Thorpe went to Sweden to compete in the Olympics. He won gold, twice.
He astonished the world at the 1912 Olympics in Stockholm by winning by huge margins both the decathlon and the pentathlon, the ultimate tests of the complete athlete.
That's when the Swedish king proclaimed he was the greatest athlete in the world. Linda Frick is the manager of Jim Thorpe Home in Yale, Oklahoma. She says it was a remarkable achievement.
It was the first year they had been offered, and he entered them both, and he won them both. And after he did that, they split them up and said they would never let one man enter both of them again because they were just too grueling.
Frick says after that, Jim Thorpe was a hero. It didn't matter if he was an Indian.
I think after he won the Olympics, nobody cared. They give him ticker tape parades and just poured it on over him after he won in the Olympics.
Around the world and in most of this country, I would say perhaps except for Oklahoma in some ways, his identity as a great athlete trumped his Native American identity. It just was so fabulous that people identified with him as a great athlete.
Again, biographer Kate Buford.
People have said Deion Sanders, often even Jim Brown, Jackie Robinson was a good multi-sport athlete. But no one really has excelled in all of these sports, baseball, football, track and field, to the extent that Jim Thorpe did.
But controversy soon found him. Thorpe had played professional baseball in North Carolina before he competed in the Olympics. The International Olympics Committee stripped Thorpe of his gold for violating amateurism rules. His Olympic accomplishments were erased from the record books. The Olympic Committee eventually presented replica medals to his family in the 1980s. With his amateur status revoked, he immediately received offers to play professional sports. Major League Baseball's New York Giants signed Thorpe for the 1913 season. Thorpe didn't flourish as a baseball hitter during his first couple of years, but in 1919, he hit his stride with the Boston Braves and ended up hitting .327 on the year. And he continued to play football. He played and coached for the Canton Bulldogs for several years and was the president of the American Professional Football Association, the predecessor of the NFL. Thorpe was a big draw for the Bulldogs, and he greatly improved attendance. When the Bulldogs joined the NFL in 1920, he was on the list that became known as the first all-NFL team. He played professional football until he retired at age 41. He's now in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
When sports reporters would get together and ask who was the greatest athlete of all, they compared any newcomer to Jim Thorpe.
Kate Buford says the 1920s were the golden age of American sports. Football and basketball, even the modern Olympics, they were still in their infancy. Agents, marketing, and publicity were all becoming a part of the game. Athletes like Babe Ruth and Jack Dempsey were emerging and becoming larger-than-life figures.
He just misses that. But he becomes this archetype of the great athlete who then has to figure out how he's going to live the rest of his life.
After sports, Thorpe had a hard time making ends meet, and he struggled with alcohol. In all, he was married 3 times, and he had 8 kids. Linda Frick from the Jim Thorpe Home.
Well, he tried everything. He dug ditches. He called dances. He did just whatever it took to make money. He had gone through the Depression. It's really kind of a sad story. He ended up broke. That's why the state of Oklahoma would have buried him. And that was probably one of the reasons that his third wife did what she did.
We'll get into what his third wife did here in just a few minutes. Jim Thorpe's family life was often surrounded by tragedy. His young brother died at age 9. Both his mother and father died when he was young. His own first son died as a child. Kate Buford says the difficulties of his life, compared with his great exploits, make for an almost operatic story. A story of a rural Native American kid from Oklahoma who goes out and conquers the athletic world, but who struggles to make ends meet as he ages.
People assumed that after the triumphs of 1912 and then the professional football career in Canton, Ohio, that he was just one long slide, that his life sort of went to pot. In fact, he had a remarkable life after that, not least going to Hollywood to make over 70 movies.
Well, of course, everybody thinks about the sports. I mean, he did things that no other human being has done before or since. But here, what I think of is one of his greater accomplishments is that he never lost his sense of tribal identity.
That's Sandra Massey. She's the historic preservationist with the Sac and Fox Nation.
He was working for the extras, you know, making sure that anybody playing a Native American was actually Native American, because, you know, you see these old Westerns and you see how awful they are. But he noticed that, you know, there was an injustice in that, so he was working to fix that.
He at this time was living in Southern California, had this whole other life in Hollywood. He appeared in at least 70 movies, maybe double that. Some of the records of those films are gone. So his life really was centered in Southern California.
Kate Buford says Thorpe was constantly called back to Oklahoma, particularly to represent Native American tribes and their interest in the state.
But several Oklahomans kept trying to find him jobs and positions in Oklahoma to bring him home. And he would flirt with the idea, but then be lured back to Hollywood.
Jim Thorpe died of a heart attack in his mobile home in California in 1953. He was 64 years old. But that's not the end of this story. This is where the Jim Thorpe story takes its most unpredictable turn.
Initially, he was going to be buried in Oklahoma, and his third wife, Patsy, knew that.
Kate Buford says the Oklahoma legislature appropriated money for a monument in Shawnee, a monument that would rival the one to Will Rogers in Claremore. Then, Governor Johnston Murray ran into a deficit. He canceled the appropriation.
So her initial impulse, her initial wish, was to honor his desire to be buried in Oklahoma with an appropriate memorial, but that did not work out.
Sandra Massey, the historic preservation officer with the Sac and Fox Nation who we met earlier, she says Jim Thorpe had told his sons and brothers that he wanted to be buried in the traditional Sac and Fox way in Oklahoma. Under normal circumstances, the Sac and Fox bury their dead 4 days after their death. In the case of Jim Thorpe, his body didn't arrive in Oklahoma until 13 days after he died because his California friends needed to raise money to send him home.
We have to buy groceries to feed everybody because you're doing two big meals the night before and then the next day. Whatever he's going to be wearing, you also have to go find a place where you can have these ceremonies because you're going to be there all night and into the next day where you can have fires. You know, we have a few places, families that have traditional houses, so traditional places. So you have to go to somebody and see if it's okay if you can use this spot, you know, so... Yeah, all these things go into the preparation. So when he actually came here, it was ready. They were able to take him right to his funeral. You have also what we call a name return, when they give the Indian name back to the clan. And the next day, there are things that we do that we, you know, to prepare somebody for, you know, going to the other side. He didn't get that because she took him away in the middle.
She is Patsy, the third wife, the widow. She came in and she took Jim Thorpe's body away in the middle of his ceremony, the day before he was supposed to be buried. Some say she arrived with a highway patrol trooper, maybe two.
He's still been in the middle all these years, so I'm thinking that, you know, yeah, it needs to finish so he can be released from this earthly plane. And because that goes into a lot of what we do, it's to help the spirit not be stuck here. You know, it's not like he's stuck like a ghost that you see on some of these shows and things like that. But he is not able to go and be free because he hasn't been released.
You see, Jim Thorpe didn't have a will. He made his intentions known that he wanted to be buried in Oklahoma, but he never wrote it down. His third wife was in control of his estate. Jim Thorpe wasn't buried for over a year. Massey says the widow Patsy kept him in cold storage in Shawnee and later Tulsa while she was shopping him around to find the highest bidder. Enter Mauch Chunk and East Mauch Chunk, two little coal mining towns in eastern Pennsylvania. Times were tough in these boroughs. They had no real industry, they were considering consolidation, and they needed a way to attract businesses and tourism dollars. For the past several years, the town had been collecting a 5 cent per week tax from its citizens to be used for an economic development project. When Patsy found Mauch Chunk, the little town had $30,000 in nickels. Patsy struck a deal with the town. Jim Thorpe would be buried there, and the town would rename itself Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. Thorpe's sons say she did it for money. Sandra Massey believes this too, but they don't have any records that any money was exchanged for Thorpe's body. People in Pennsylvania say Patsy promised to use her connections with the NFL to bring the Pro Football Hall of Fame to the little town. That didn't happen. It instead went to Canton, Ohio. Patsy's other promises rang hollow too, like a 500-bed hospital, a museum, and an Olympic stadium. Jim Thorpe never set foot in the town that bears his name while he was alive.
He was interested in being buried at Carlisle. While he was alive, they did go visit Carlisle, but Carlisle said they couldn't meet her price. So he didn't get there. Because if he were actually buried there, I think that would make sense to a lot of people.
Well, of course, I'd like to see Jim come back to Oklahoma.
Again, Linda Frick with the Jim Thorpe Home.
And the Sacking Fox believe that the soul walks the earth until it's buried in its own ground. And that's a terrible thing for the boys to have to think. So for their sakes, I would like the body put back in Oklahoma.
He was originally in their cemetery. You know, he was in a mausoleum. They were waiting. They were trying to get this roadside park fixed up for him. So then, you know, they put him in the cemetery. They take him out of the cemetery to put him in this roadside park. Why would they do that unless it's for tourism? Because, you know, you can very well have a memorial in a cemetery. I mean, look at Abraham Lincoln. He's in a cemetery. He's a tourist. His grave is a tourist attraction. I've been there myself a few times, but, you know, it's a tourist attraction. But you can do that in the cemetery, so why was he taken out? You know, he was put in the roadside park, so I think that's pretty blatant that it was for tourism.
In 2010, Jim Thorpe's son, Jack, sued the Pennsylvania borough to repatriate his father's remains and bring them back to Oklahoma under the Native American Graves and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA. Congress passed the law in 1990. It allows tribes to claim Native American remains or funerary objects that are held in museums. We'll get into more detail about NAGPRA in just a minute. Jack Thorpe died a year later, and two other sons, Richard and William, took over the suit. In 2013, a federal judge ruled on the side of the sons, saying the town and its mausoleum amounted to a museum. A year later, an appeals court panel reversed the decision, allowing the body to stay in Pennsylvania. The sons are now seeking an appeal with the U.S. Supreme Court. So, NAGPRA. To help us explain this, we're going to turn the mic over for a few minutes to
Taiyawagi Helton. I'm a professor of law at the University of Oklahoma College of Law. You know, we might ask why NAGPRA was necessary in the first place. And we estimate that at the time NAGPRA was passed, the Smithsonian Institution housed about 18,500 remains of Native people from North America. The Tennessee Valley Authority, which evacuated lots of sites when they were building hydroelectric power and flood control projects, has probably 13,500 of them. And at the time of this statute's passage, there were probably 600,000 human remains in museums across the United States and 2 million worldwide. And when you look at the remains of other demographic groups, like Revolutionary War soldiers or pilgrims or Civil War soldiers or colonists, they were quickly studied and then reinterred when they were dug up. But Native American remains were, for the most part, studied and then put on shelves and never returned to the ground. And that was profoundly troubling to a lot of Native people.
The Third Circuit Court of Appeals, that's the court that decided that Thorpe's remains would stay in Pennsylvania. They agreed that NAGPRA covered the situation, but they didn't think this was Congress's intention when they passed the law. The judges viewed this as a family dispute. The widow who interred him in Pennsylvania and some of the grandchildren who want him to stay there against the surviving sons. The Third Circuit judges didn't think Congress intended for NAGPRA to be a tool for solving family disputes, so they invoked a really rare doctrine known as the absurdity doctrine.
So the absurdity doctrine basically says that the law won't allow, or courts shouldn't allow, the law to lead to absurd results. It's more often used when the statutory language isn't quite clear or is a little bit ambiguous. So if you've got one reasonable way of reading the statute and one way of reading the statute that would get you an outrageous or absurd result, you don't choose the absurd one. Where I disagree with the court here is that they seem to think it's absurd that the literal reading of the statute would require that these bones be returned to his lineal descendants. And although it's atypical because it involves a family dispute, And his wife was legally designated to be the administratrix of his estate. It's still troubling that the court would invoke absurdity in order to overcome a plain and literal meaning rather than invoke absurdity to choose among results.
And then there's Lindsay Robertson, who agrees. He's the faculty director at the University of Oklahoma's Center for the Study of American Indian Law and Policy. He also doesn't agree with the Third Circuit's decision. He says, yes, the family may have disagreed over the location of Thorpe's remains, but that isn't the point.
What this really is a situation that arose from the attempt of a pair of Pennsylvania boroughs to establish what amounts to a tourist attraction in a remote mountainous part of Pennsylvania, a means of drawing people to come in to stay in local hotels, to spend money in local restaurants, so that they could visit the grave of the greatest athlete in history. And they paid money for that. They essentially bought Jim Thorpe's remains and put them on display. Now, they're in a mausoleum. They're not mounted in a glass display case, but it's not clear to me that that makes any difference under NAGPRA or ought to. You can look on visitpa.com, which purports to be, and I assume correctly, the official Pennsylvania tourism website, and visit Jim Thorpe's grave in lovely Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, is one of the listed items. So the state of Pennsylvania is still attempting to use these remains to attract tourist dollars. And I think that's a big part of what NAGPRA was intended to prevent, the use of human remains, of native human remains, to attract tourists.
So for now, the final resting place of Jim Thorpe's remains hinges on whether or not the U.S. Supreme Court chooses to take up the case. Originally, in 1953, Jim Thorpe would have been buried in a rural family cemetery near Shawnee. Now, if his body comes back to Sac and Fox Land, his ultimate burial place is still up in the air. Sandra Massey says he could be buried in one place and a memorial erected elsewhere.
Wherever he goes, we would have to protect him because his fame has lasted all this time. Now it's not just, you know, burying one of our tribal members with his family. Now we have to think, well, is he going to be safe where we put him? Why is there a fight? Why is everybody jumping in and weighing in on something that's really none of their business? Because I see a lot of the comments. And why are they not thinking these are sons who want their dad back? You know, that's just a simple, basic thing. So why, you know, I've seen all kinds of stuff that we want him for tourism and things like that. Why would we want to do that to him after all these years when he's been a tourist attraction? And that is what he is.
Thank you for joining us today for Oklahoma Voices. A special shout out this week to KGOU's Kate Carlton Greer and Brian Hardzinski, who were both a huge help in putting together the show. The views expressed in today's broadcast are not necessarily those of the staff of KGOU or its licensee, the University of Oklahoma. For more information on this and other Oklahoma Voices broadcasts, go to kgou.org. I'm Jacob McClellan. Thanks for listening this week to Oklahoma Voices.